Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Mitzvos is Samech Tes. We're in the middle of the sixth parak of the Masechta. We are a little bit behind. We're in Samech Ches. I'm going to go back to the Mishnah. I'm going to start again from the Mishnah in Samech Ches Amud Aleph, so that way we'll start fresh with a brand new sugya. Thank Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zech Nishmas Liba Garvela Bashmuel. And let's start once again from the Mishnah. So you have an orphan girl, and she is being married off either by the mother or by the brother. Mida ata, and she's doing so willingly. The kasvelo b'mel b'chamishim zuz, and they write for her a dowry. Okay, the topic of the sixth parak has been, for the most part, the dowry that's written on behalf of the girl. Usually, it's written by the father. The father is the one who is responsible for the dowry. But obviously, the mission over here is talking about what happens when there's an absence of the father, who then is responsible for the dowry. So the mission describes now that the heir is the wife and her brothers are writing for her the dowry, and they're writing for her a very modest dowry. But modest over here, I don't mean in a positive way. I mean, they really shortchanged her. So they wrote for her a dowry of b'meil b'chamishim zuz, 100 zuz, or 50 zuz. Now remember, we learned already in the previous Mishnah that a base minimum dowry is 50 zuz. So they're writing for her a 50 zuz dowry, so that's really base minimum. So the Mishnah goes on to say, Yecholihi mishitag lahotzi miyanda masha ra'ili nasin la. So as she gets older, so she could say, she could go back to the family and say, look, I'm a little bit older now, I'm a little bit smarter now, and I realize what happened. You needed to write me a dowry. Had Dad been alive, he would have written me a significant dowry. And you guys shortchanged me, and she has a taina. She has a legitimate claim. She could take her family to Beis Din and demand that they give her a dowry that's commensurate to what she deserves.
Could her husband do that too?
Huh?
Could their husband do that too?
Can her husband be her advocate? I mean, you know, the husband can certainly, you know, push her in that direction. But the husband...
It benefits the husband, too.
Yeah, but that... Correct. But he's not going to be the litigant. Meaning, I agree, totally agreed. But he's not going to be the litigant. She'll be the litigant, and the husband for sure can advise her. Rabbi Yehuda Omeim, he says, Now, Rabbi Yehuda says as follows. Let's say the father was alive for the first daughter getting married. And he married her off. And now we know exactly how much the father wanted to give as a dowry, because he did. The father actually gave it the following as a dowry. So, as we discussed yesterday, according to Rabbi Yehuda, what did he do? He set the bar. So now, God forbid, let's say the father dies, and now the second daughter is getting married. So the second daughter can say, look, this is what Dad would have given. How do I know that? Because look at my older sister. Dad gave her the following dowry, so therefore, we know how much Dad would have wanted. So the Chachamim say, look, it's true that Dad gave a certain dowry, but as we all know, wealth fluctuates. Sometimes we're wealthy, sometimes we're not wealthy, and even in the course of one's lifetime. So money comes, money goes. So just because Dad gave a certain dowry for one daughter, so that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to give the absolute same amount for the next daughter. So how do you know if Dad's financial condition would have changed? So the dowry for the second daughter would have changed as well. So Elishamim is in a chasim no sin law. So therefore, according to the Chachamim, what you do is, again, remember, by the second daughter, Dad's no longer alive. So what you do is you make an appraisal of the estate. You figure out how much the portfolio of the estate is worth. And then afterwards, then you make a determination of how much she's going to get. As we're going to learn later on, typically, traditionally, she gets 10% of the estate as a dowry. So in other words, it's not going to be based on what Dad gave, because that doesn't mean anything, according to the Chachamim. Okay, well, stay tuned, as we're going to be discussing more this debate between the Chachamim and Rav Yehuda. Seemingly, if we were to take a side, I mean, we're not supposed to take sides. Eilu ve'eilu, they both have valid position. But if we were to take a side, the Chachamim's position seems to be much more logical, meaning that it's not going to be based on what Dad once upon a time gave, as wealth does fluctuate. So stay tuned, because we're going to discuss later on how to better understand the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Amar Shmuel, we start with the Gemara. We did this yesterday, but let's do this again. Amar Shmuel, Parnasa Shamim Ba'av. So when it comes to Parnasa over here in this context means dowry. So when assessing the dowry, so Shamim Ba'av. So how is it going to be evaluated? Evaluated based on what Dad was. Meaning, what was Dad? So, like I said yesterday, so replay the eulogy. Meaning, Dad, we know Dad's no longer with us, so therefore he's not actually writing the dowry. So what would he have given? So if at the eulogy everyone talks about how he was the kindest and the most generous person in the world, so then, and I joke a little bit about the eulogy, meaning it's not really the eulogy that's going to be the determinant, but in other words, we all know whether or not he was generous or whether he was cheap, right? Rashi goes over both of those extremes. The Vatran Okamtsan. That's the Rashi's language, right? Either he was Mevater, he just gave away his money, he really didn't care much for his own money, he gave it away, or Kamtsan, or he was cheap. So, and that's what you're going to write as a dowry for the daughter. That's the halacha as stated by Shmuel. So in other words, we're going to project what dad would have done had he been here, based on his general generosity, his level of generosity. Meitzvei, the Gemara challenges. So the Braisa over here talks about the dowry for the daughter. Now the Braisa uses two words, nizonis umisparnasos. So that those two words seem to be describing two different things. Nizonis means she gets support. That's her daily rationing of food. And misparnasos, and that's also a reference to her dowry as well. The Braisa says, and don't spend your time trying to figure out what dad would have done. Don't do that. Rather, the Braisa says, look at the estate as it currently is right now. Dad's no longer with us. Look at the estate, make an assessment of what the estate is worth, and just on that, based on that, then you're going to make an assessment in terms of how much the dowry is. So, sounds like from the Braisa, the simple reading of the Braisa, we do not try to figure out what dad would have given. There's no projection. We don't project, well, if dad were here, here's what he would have given. The Braisa says very clearly, this is simply a formula. You figure out how much is in the estate, and you give based on that. So, my love, Parnassus Habal. Now, the Braisa says the word Parnassus. Isn't that a reference to Parnassus Habal, otherwise known as dowry? So, Amar Rav Nachman, Yisrael, lo, but Parnassus Atzma. Another Gemara says no. Parnassus over here means, not in its usual context, but over here it means her support, meaning her food. So the Gemara says, "Hani zonus and it's parnas katani." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but go back to the Braisa, reread the Braisa. The Braisa already talks about her support. It says nizonis. It says nizonis umis parnasos. So my lav achas parnasos abav achas parnasos atzma. Seemingly, the simple pshat in the Braisa is one's talking about the parnasa of the father and the parnasa of the husband, meaning dowry, and the other one's talking about her support. Lo, the Gemara says, no, you can still maintain this pshat. We're talking about her support. And we're just talking about different aspects of her support, talking about her food, we're talking about her clothing, but really we're talking about her support. That's what the Braisa is talking about. And if that's correct, meaning if that's a correct assessment of the Braisa, so then Shmuel's position could still be defended. Shmuel says, now when it comes to dowry, let's project what dad would have given. That halacha of Shmuel can still maintain. What about the Braisa that says, let's look at the estate, let's figure out how much the estate is actually worth, and let's just base ourselves on a formula. So the Gemara says that Braisa could be just talking about the support. Okay, Tanan. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Our Mishnah. V'chacham amar min pamim shadamani v'ashir o'ashir v'hani elosham nechasim nosin la. So what do the Chachamim say in our Mishnah? Look, wealth fluctuates. Sometimes you're wealthy, sometimes you lose the wealth, sometimes you gain the wealth. So you can't base a dowry based on what dad once upon a time gave, because wealth fluctuates. That's the position of the Chachamim. My ani or my asher. Now, we talk about being poor, we talk about being wealthy. Inayima ani. So are we talking about actual portfolio wealth? Are we talking about a person's money? So the Gemara says, that puts Rav Yehuda in a very awkward position. Meaning, then what's Rav Yehuda arguing? Look, the family once upon a time was wealthy. And dad, for that first daughter, while he was alive, gave her a tremendous dowry. And now, dad died, and now the estate is reduced, and the estate is really not what it once was. And you mean to tell me that according to Rav Yehuda, well, if dad were alive, this is what he would have given. That's not true. Meaning, how can you put Rav Yehuda in that position where the family doesn't have the money, and dad's no longer alive, and you're still going to be insistent that we're going to give the same dowry to the second daughter that we gave to the first just because the first got it? Yeah, but when the first got it, they were wealthy, and now they're not. So, and you want to really put Rav Yehuda in that kind of position? Gemara says it's very difficult to maintain. So, halaisle, Gemara says very simply, they don't have money. So how can you put a strain on the family to give the second daughter the dowry that the first one got if they don't have money? That's a very difficult position to maintain. So, So the Gemara says, "Ani anoshir here has to mean something else. What else does it mean? It means attitude. Meaning, people's attitudes change. Now, generally speaking, I find that people's attitudes don't change, but it could. There's always that possibility, right? Hope for change. So the there is yeah, okay. correct. I heard myself also. People's attitude could change. So in other words, he was, once upon a time, he was wealthy in terms of his attitude, meaning he was very generous, and then at a later point in time in his life, he changed the attitude. That's what the Chachamim are arguing. The Chachamim are arguing you can't go based on what he once was, because he's no longer with us, and there's at least that possibility that he's gonna change his attitude. So according to the Chachamim, what do you do? Don't guess, don't project, just look at the estate, figure out, calculate how much the estate is worth, 10% of that, that's the dowry. That's the Chachamim. And what's Rav Yehuda's counter-argument? Now we're going to put Rav Yehuda in a better position in terms of arguing. Rav Yehuda's position is, no, people's attitudes don't change. Meaning if Dad was generous and he was generous to the day that he died, you know what? We do have the right to project. Dad was generous, he would have been generous now. If Dad was cheap, let's project. You know, Dad was cheap when he was alive. I mean, we don't like saying it, but it's true. Dad was cheap when he was alive. Dad is going to continue being cheap. The Gemara says, that's the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim. Do we assume that people's attitudes don't change? And even after Dad died, can we maintain that same attitude that he once had when he was alive? That's Rav Yehuda's position. Or no, the Chachamim say, don't do that. Because there's a possibility that people's attitudes will change. V'ketani, now with all that stated, now let's take a look at the next part of the Mishnah, Shamim is the Chasim, that what do you do according to the Chachamim? An assessment of the estate and give based on the estate. So Amalos and Abasa Umdana. So what do you see according to the Chachamim? We do not project. We don't try to figure out what Dad would have given. So, that means that the Chachamim's, I'm sorry, let me say that again clearer. That means that the Chachamim's position is against Shmuel. To which the Gemara says, you're right. And Shmuel's not going like the Chachamim. So Huda Amar Karebi Yehuda. So Gemara says, our understanding of the Mishnah now is perfect, meaning that's the correct understanding of the Mishnah. And when Shmuel gave his ruling that we do project what Dad would have given, you know what Shmuel's basically saying? The halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara says that none. Rav Yehuda Omri, Misi Bas Rishona, Yenasin L'Shneya, Kederach Shanasin L'Vishona. That's exactly what Rav Yehuda said in the Mishnah. And now it comes out that according to Shmuel, Shmuel's basically telling us the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. V'nei malachi Rav Yehuda. To which the Gemara says, okay, Shmuel, if that's what you're saying, so say it. Meaning, say it clearly. Just simply say the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah. Iyam halacha Rav Yehuda, Avamina Dafki Yisia, Digali Daite, Avalo Yisia Lo, Kamashman, Taimed the Rav Yehuda, Dazin, and Basin, Umdana, Lo Shna Yisia, Avalo Shna Lo Yisia. So the Gemara, to which the Gemara says, look, if all he said was halacha like Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda gave a very specific example, which is, Dad actually gave a dowry for the first daughter, and then unfortunately Dad's no longer around for the second daughter, and now we're projecting. But here it's an easy way to project because he did it already historically once before. So, right, past performance is going to be an indicator of what he would have done had he been alive. But Shmuel's going one step further. And that's why he didn't want to just simply say the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. Shmuel's taking it now to the next step, which is, let's say, unfortunately, Dad didn't marry off any of his daughters. And now it's a question of, here's the first daughter up for marriage. Dad, unfortunately, is no longer around. Shmuel's saying that I'm still maintaining that according to Rav Yehuda, you have the right to project. Dad never has married off a daughter. We don't know what Dad would have done. Yeah, but we know that Dad was, generally speaking, a generous soul. And Dad was very kind with his money and very generous with his money. And what Shmuel's telling us is that even in that case, Rav Yehuda would say, we have the right to project. So now, that's a big chiddush within Rav Yehuda. Question. I mean, the Gemara doesn't phrase it exactly this way, but essentially this is what the Gemara is asking. Why didn't the Mishnah give us a bigger chiddush? Meaning, if that's true according to Rav Yehuda, shouldn't the Mishnah have done that? So the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you why the Mishnah chose this particular example, where Dad has given in the past to one of his older daughters. Because, Odicha Kocha de Rabbanan. Because now, we know the rabbis argue with Rav Yehuda. To what degree do the Chachamim argue with Rav Yehuda? I'll show you how much. even if dad already gave historically to a dowry to one of his daughters, so can't you now at least argue? Meaning you want to argue with Rav Yehuda, that's fine. But here, dad actually showed us how much he was ready to give to one of his older daughters. So can't you at least now maintain that for the next daughter and for the daughter after that, we should be on course, same type of dowry? So that's exactly the point. The Chachamim say no. According to the Chachamim, you never follow Umdana. Meaning that's never going to be the guide in terms of, we never make projections, we never try to say, here's what dad would have done. And even in a scenario where dad already gave dowry for the first and second daughter, it doesn't matter. We never go with projections, we never go with Umdana. Good. So now we have basically clarified the position of the Chachamim, the position of Rav Yehuda, and according to Shmuel, Shmuel says halacha is like Rav Yehuda. Even in the extreme scenario where, even if dad never gave a dowry to any one of his daughters, dad unfortunately died before the marriage of any one of his daughters, we're still going to work with an umdana, we're still going to project. Amalei Rav L'Rav Chista, Darshim Mishmacha halacha k'Rav Yehuda. Rav says to Rav Chista, you know what, I heard in your name that the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda and Rav Mishnah. Amalei, yeh Rav, kol kihani mili, mal yasa tijrushu mishmai. To which Rav Chista says, good. I hope they say other good things in my name as well. Meaning, that's correct. I'll take credit for that. I do think the halacha falls like Rav Yehuda. And I hope I get quoted correctly in the future as well. The Gemara says, but wait 1 second. Rebbe, we have a statement made by Rebbe, which is that a daughter being supported by the brothers, meaning dad unfortunately is no longer alive, it is now the responsibility of the estate, and the brothers are the holders of the estate, who are going to be supporting the daughter. When she gets married, how much does she receive as a dowry? 10%. 10% of the estate. Now, are we working with Umdana? Obviously not. In other words, it's a simple formula. So, the Amar Rav Yechusa Karebi. And, let's now amplify the question. Rav says, the halacha falls like Rebbe. Now the Rava says halacha falls like Rebbe. So what is that telling us? We do not work with Umdana. We do not project what dad would have given. We work with a simple formula. Here's what the estate is valued at. She gets 10%. End of discussion. And there's no projection. So lo kasha hada amdene, hada lo amdene. So the Gemara says, no. We could still say that Rava really does hold like Shmuel, who holds like Rebbe Yehuda. We could maintain that position. How can Rav now say the halacha falls like Rebbe? Rebbe's not following a projection. Rav is just working with a simple formula. Gemara says, look, if we don't know what dad was, meaning the family just moved in and God forbid the father died right after they moved in or right before they moved in. So we have simply no knowledge of what dad was. So then we have no projections that we can work with. And we can't use an umdana because we simply don't know. Then we go with the formula of 10% of the estate. If, however, dad was alive in the community and everyone knew him and everyone knew how either generous or cheap he was, so then we're going to go with umdana, then we'll go with a projection. That's the Gemara saying, that's Rav's position, fleshed out in its totality. So on one hand, he does go like Rav Yehuda, umdana, projection. On the other hand, if we don't know, so then we're going to go back to a formula of 10%. Hachinami mistabadam ravada brava maisa v'nasan la Rebbe echad mishnei masar b'nechasim. So the Gemara says, and you know what? We're right. Meaning this answer that we gave in defense of Rav is absolutely correct. Because look at another Braisa. Or not a Braisa, but rather an episode. There was an incident where a Rebbe gave Echad Mishnei Masar B'Nechasim. He gave as a dowry 1/12 of the estate. 1/12 of the estate, what just happened? She got shortchanged. Right? She got less than what she should have gotten. And it's Rebbe who was allocating from the estate a 1/12 for the daughter. That's not consistent with what Rebbe said earlier, which is that you get 10%. So kashen adade alav shmamina hadam dene hadalo amdene shmamina. So the Gemara says it's not a kasha because again we're going to generally default to umdana. That's what we would prefer to use, meaning that instead of using a formula, you operate with what dad would have given. In this particular case, dad was cheap. I mean, clearly. And so when Rebbe assessed how much of the estate should go to the dowry of the daughter, so that's cheap, so she's going to get a 12th. Now, mind you, by the way, I'm going to make a full admission. I don't know how you, meaning the umdana is a nice idea. You project what dad would have given. But, I mean, that's speculative. I understand that. I don't know how exactly they arrive at their numbers, meaning how do they know to give a 12th?
But how do you know that a 12th of this guy's wealth is not a lot more than a 10th of somebody else's?
I totally understand. I don't know how to arrive at the number. Obviously, the formula is much easier because the formula is objective. I understand that. But that's exactly... Okay, good. That I don't know. But what's clear from the Gemara, however, is that if you operate with umdana, so then it fluctuates. And it's going to fluctuate based on what dad was. And now that it fluctuates based on dad was, now you can explain how Rebbe gave a 12th. And then if we don't know, so then you go back to 10th. Yeah.
10% is less than 12%. Well, what am I missing?
No. A tenth, I'm sorry, I'm speaking in fractional. It's 1/10 versus 1/12. Okay. Yeah, good. Correct. I misspoke. I said percentage. I meant 1/10 versus 1/12. Gufa Ama Rebbe Basni Zonis Menachem No Tels Yisro Nechasim. So Gemara goes back to the following. Rebbe says that a daughter is being supported from the brothers, so she's going to get 10%. 1/10. Amar lo Rebbe Lezverach Mishesh Lo Aster Banos VeUbein Einol Leben B'Makom Banos. So now the Gemara is going to quote the next part of the Brayse, and perhaps this question is bothering you. It's a pretty straightforward question. So let's get this straight. So let's say the daughter is going to get 10% of the estate as a dowry. Let's say the father has 10 daughters. Okay, 10 daughters. So what does that mean? And it means that if dad, let's say, had 10 daughters, then let's say dad on top of that had a son. So do you really mean to tell me that what's going to happen now is that the son's going to get zero of the estate? Meaning in the world of Yerusha, the son is Yerush. Now this dowry that the daughter gets, that's an institution by the Chachamim. But at the expense of the son losing the entire estate, the Gemara can't imagine. Now, just to explain the Gemara's question a little bit better, meaning the institution of dowry is for the father to give a dowry, it's recommended, highly recommended, meaning, you know, but it's not a chiyuv min haTorah. It's not a Torah obligation to give your daughter a dowry. Obviously, in this parak, we've walked away with the conclusion that it's, you know, bordering on, you know, this is an expectation that a father has, that he should give his daughter a dowry. But we already seen before in the parak, the daughter can get nothing. In other words, and she can agree to getting nothing. Okay, it's terrible, but it's possible. Meanwhile, Yerusha is a din de oraisa. So you mean to tell me that the institution of dowry is going to upset the Yerusha de Oraisa, and that each daughter is going to receive 10% of the estate, and if there are 10 daughters, that leaves zero? That leaves nothing for the son to inherit? And the institution of dowry is going to upset the din de Oraisa of Yerusha? So you already know the answer. So that's okay. That's what Rabbi's about to tell us. So Amar Lahem, we're now in the last line of Samech Chesem and Aleph. Kach Ani Omer, Rishonim tell us, Yisro Nechasim, Shniyah B'Meshashayah, Ushishis B'Meshashayah, V'Chozes V'Cholkos B'Shavah. So the Gemara says, no, 10% does not mean 10% of the total, it means 10% of the remainder. So a little bit of math over here. So in other words, so the first daughter is going to get 10%. 10% now leaving now, let's say, $1,000. I know that's a ridiculous number. But, okay, if the estate was at $1,000, so the fourth daughter is going to get $100. Now you take off the $100 off the estate, now you're down to $900. Next daughter is going to get 10% of the remainder. And v'chula v'chula, and you keep going. And then he ends off with the following two words. In other words, don't turn the page yet. V'cholkos b'shaveh, and then everyone gets an equal portion. What does that mean, everyone gets an equal portion? The way I just described it, not everyone's getting an equal portion. The first one's getting 10, the second one's getting 9, and we keep going down because it's a 10% of the remainder. What does that mean? Rashi explains over here, and it will be clearer as we continue in the Gemara. Actually, let's turn the page. I'm sorry, I said Rashi. The Gemara. Samaches Amud Beis. Kochar v'chad d'anav sheshakla. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Everyone's taking their portion. So hachi kamar. Gemara says, no, this is what the last two words of the Braisa means. Im bo kulam inase ka'achas chokos b'shavet. It means like this. Look. If we are dealing with sequential, meaning there are 10 daughters and each one of them going to get married, so then sequentially, the first daughter that comes, she's going to get 10, 10% of the estate. Next daughter that comes to get married, let's say a year later, she's going to get 10% of the remainder. So in other words, the way it's going to operate in general is, if they're coming sequentially to get married, so each one is getting 10% of the remainder. But let's say all the daughters come to the estate at the same day. I know it's unusual, but just to explain what's going on here. Let's say they all come to the estate, meaning they're going to the brothers on the same day. Baruch Hashem, we all found our Bashert. We all want to get married. And now there's no sequence. So now what do you do? And again, you can't give each one of them 10%, because if you give each one of them 10%, there's nothing left of the estate. And that's just untenable. So here's what you do. The formula for how they're going to determine how it's going to work is, we'll figure 10%, 10% of the remainder, 10% of the remainder, and you keep doing that based on the number of girls that there are in the family who are getting married. Then you take that amount, you pull all that money together and distribute equitably that amount to the daughters. So in other words, you treat them as if they were coming in sequentially in terms of 10% of the remainder, 10% of the remainder, but then you pull that money together and then you make an equitable distribution of that to the daughters. That's the formula you use if they're all coming at the same time. The Gemara says that's what the end of the Braisa means. Im ba'u kulam l'inasekach, if they come together, chalukos b'shaveh, so then we make an equitable distribution based on the formula that I just presented. Misayel Rav Masna Damer Rav Masna Im ba'u l'inasek kulam kecha nolam iser echad. So the Gemara says this is a very good support for Rav Masna, because Rav Masna says if they all come at the same time, give them 1/10. To which the Gemara says, Isar echad sakadatcha? What? Just give all of them 1/10? Ella notlus isar ke echad. So obviously that's not what Rav Masna meant. He meant ke echad, give them as one time. Meaning like the formula that I just described. Right? The first one gets 10%, the second one gets 10% of the remainder, but don't give it to them. Meaning, and then pull all that money together, and then make an equitable distribution. Tana Rabbanan. Habanos. Okay, period. Adkan. In other words, it's a good time for me to pause and to breathe. Okay, so what have we learned so far in the daf since the Mishnah? So again, there's an institution of dowry, and the big discussion that we've been having is, how do you figure out how much the daughter is going to get if dad's no longer alive? If dad's alive, so he's in charge of the estate. I mean, he is the estate. So he'll make the determination how much to give his daughter as a dowry. Good. And then if dad's no longer alive, so how do we figure it? So the Gemara's conclusion is, this is Shmuel's opinion, this is Rava's opinion, is that we project what dad would have given based on his degree of generosity or stinginess. And if we don't know, so then you go 10%. 10% is the baseline formula in the absence of knowing what dad would have given. And and when we say 10%, what we really mean is each subsequent daughter is going to give 10% of the remainder, not 10% of the total. Otherwise, 10 daughters are going to deplete the entire estate. And finally, the last point to summarize is that if the daughter is coming at the same time, we're not going to go 10% of the total, but we're going to still use the formula of 10% of the remainder. But because they're coming at the same time, we pool all that money together, and then we make an equitable distribution of that pooled money. Tan Rabbanan.
In the Mishnah, there was Chachamim versus Yehuda, so you're choosing
Yehuda. It's a Rav Yehuda. The Gemara says we go with Rav Yehuda over the Chachamim.
Is it one of rare occasions?
Yeah, it's a rare occasion where we go with the Yachid over the Rabbim. Correct. But Shmuel said it, and Rava said it, and correct. It's a fair analysis. Tan Rabbanan, we continue now. We're on the Braisa on the top of Samches Amud Beis. So again, the big topic of discussion has been and will continue to be throughout this parak, the dowry. Habanos bein bagru ashlo nisu, bein nisu ashlo bagru, ivdu mizonosehem, velo ivdu parnasasan. Divrei Rebbe. Okay. What is there going to be any type of statute of limitation for this dowry that the daughter is going to receive? So in terms of mizonos, the answer is yes, meaning the estate doesn't have to keep feeding her. The estate feeds her until either marriage or until she becomes a bulgaris. That Rebbe says that's clear. But what about a dowry? In other words, think about it. Dad would have given her a dowry at whatever age she got married. So now when dad's no longer alive, now it's the estate providing her the dowry. Is there going to be any statute of limitation? So according to Rebbe, no. The answer is no. No statute of limitation. She will be entitled to a dowry regardless of what age she gets married at. Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af Ivdu Parnasasan. So Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar says, no. there is going to be a limitation in terms of her parnasa. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, if she gets married as a Bogaris, and unfortunately dad's no longer alive, and now all there is just the estate and her brother is controlling the estate, so she's going to forfeit. If she gets married as a Bogaris, she will not be entitled to a parnasa. Now, if the brothers want to, they certainly may, but they're not obligated in doing so. Ketzad hein osos. So then the Braisa says, just some plain old good advice. So what should this girl do? In other words, she's now a Nara, and she's only a Nara for 6 months. And I understand that's a lot of responsibility, financial responsibility, placed on her shoulders. So what they should do is rent a husband. I don't know how many times I'm going to get to use that phrase in the daf. We're learning the Gemara, but basically rent a husband. So it's not perfectly clear what that expression means. I know what the Gemara is driving at. The Gemara is basically driving at the idea that once she becomes a Bulgarian, she's no longer going to be entitled to her parnasa. If she wants a parnasa, she finds a husband. And she'll incentivize, meaning she'll go to a man, she'll say to a man, look, here's my story. I'm going to become a Bulgarian shortly. So, how about this? Not only do you get me, which will be the finest catch in the world if we get married, but on top of that, if you marry me now, as opposed to later, so then my brothers are going to be forced to give me an estate. Forced to give me a dowry. So it basically, she's going to incentivize the guy to marry her because she's going to get a dowry. That's more or less what the Gemara is saying. But Sochros, admittedly, is a strange term to use in this context. It basically means she's going to rent a husband. I'll suggest it, but it's very hard to suggest. I don't think the Gemara just basically means she'll just use a man to get the dowry, and then, you know, and then after some time she'll say, okay, good. I extracted the dowry out of my family. Okay, the marriage can now conclude. Right? The marriage of convenience, if you will. I don't think that's what the Gemara is saying. Okay, but it's a possibility, but that's a difficult possibility. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Lihuna Hilchasa Karebi. Okay, and so again, now we're dealing with a very basic issue, and that is there going to be terms to the dowry? Can she outgrow the dowry? Again, not from the father, we're talking about from the estate. So it's a machlokas between Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says yes, she can outgrow it, and Rebbe says no. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Lihuna Hilchasa Karebi. So the Gemara says, the halacha is like Rebbe. Okay. So in other words, there are no terms for the dowry. She can't outgrow the dowry. So the Gemara says, well, based on this ruling of Rav Nachman, let's go back to our Mishnah again. And what did the Mishnah say? That we have an orphan girl that she gets married off by either the mother or the brothers, meaning there's no father. So, and willingly, and again, a very miserly dowry of 50 or 100 zuz. As she gets older, she can go back to her mother, back to her brothers, and say, guys, unfair what you did. You owe me such a small dowry, and you know that I was deserving of more dowry, and she has a legitimate taina. That's what we learned back in the Mishnah. So, what's the Gemara's point? Taima de ketana. The reason why she has a legitimate taina is because she got married as a minor. Hagidola vitra. But what sounds like from the Mishnah doesn't say that clearly, but it's pretty clear in the Mishnah. The diuk is clear in the Mishnah. That had she got married as an adult, and she was mevater, and she basically, she looked at the small amount of dowry that she received, and she's like, okay, it's not the greatest, but fine. And it sounds like from the Mishnah, she can't go back to her family and say, hey, that wasn't fair what you did to me. Look at the kind of dowry you gave me, and you know you should have given me more. It sounds like from the Mishnah that as a gedola, she cannot go back. If that's true, doesn't sound like our Mishnah siding with Rebbe. Sounds like our Mishnah siding with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So the Gemara says, Lokasha had the machai de lo machai. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we could draw the following distinction. If she protests, meaning as a gedola, if she says, look, you're writing me a dower of 50 zuz, of 100 zuz, it's ridiculous. I'm still going to get married. I'm not going to not get married, but I'm telling you right now, I'm lodging an official protest. This is ridiculous. This can't be the dowry that you really are entitled to give me, that I'm really entitled to receive, but you know what? I'm going to get married anyway. And then at a later point in time, I'll take you to court. So if she makes a machav, she makes a formal protest, good. So then she can come back later. So, but if she doesn't make a formal protest, so then the Gemara says, so then she's going to have to settle for what she received. And the Gemara says, and this distinction, in fact, is a good distinction. Deem king kasha derebi ad derebi, because look, well, there's going to be another statement of Rebbe, which seemingly will not be consistent with what we learned earlier, what Rebbe said. The time we learned on a brisa, Rebbe Omer, Basin, Izons, Menachem, Not Lo, Seis, and Nechastim. So, if you have a girl who's being supported by her brothers, so she's entitled to a dowry. What does that sound like? Nizonis din, shein, and nizonis lo. It sounds like as long as she's being supported, she's entitled to a dowry. So, which means that once she's no longer being supported, now we know that support runs out. We know that once she becomes an adult, the estate no longer has to support her. Okay? And it sounds like what Rebbe's saying is that once that terminates, so does the dowry. To which the Gemara says, well, wait a second. Rebbe told us that when it comes to dowry, there is no limitation. She's always entitled to a dowry. So Allah, Shmamina, Adamachai, Dolamachai, Shmamina. So the Gemara says our distinction's got to be correct. Meaning, when she becomes an adult, she turns to her brothers and she says, look, I'm becoming an adult. I understand you're no longer supporting me, but I am not relinquishing my right to that dowry. If she makes a machal, she makes she lodges an official protest, so then she continues to be eligible to receive a dowry. If, however, as she becomes an adult, she says to her brothers, look, I'm on my own, or she doesn't say anything, she makes no protest, not only is there going to be a termination of her mizonos, but there's also going to be a termination of, not a termination, but she will forfeit her right to receive a dowry. Amle Ravina Rav Amalan Rav Azabava Mishmecha Bagre Natsricha Limchos. Nisei and Tzricha Limchos. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Ada Bar Ava. Okay, no, I'm sorry. Rav Ada Bar Ava quoted in your name that once she becomes a Bogeris, she doesn't have to protest. Once she gets married, she doesn't have to protest. Bagrav and Niseis, however, if we combine the two of them, she becomes an adult and she gets married. So Tzricha Limchos. So she has to protest. In other words, in order for her to continue to receive a dowry, she has to lodge a formal protest. Now, Miyamar Rav HaHachiv HaHaisvei, Rav HaLarav Nachmi Yisona. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you remember the conversation that we just had, where we quoted the Mishnah, we quoted the Braisa regarding Yisoma, I'm sorry, the Mishnah, V'shanila Adamachai, Adalamachai. And we said that if she lodges a protest, so she will not forfeit her dowry. If she doesn't lodge a protest, then she will forfeit her dowry. L'kashi Adakamidzani Minayu, Adalakamidzani Minayu. So the Gemara says, okay, look, you're right. That basic distinction still is intact. In other words, as a girl now becoming an adult, and again, dad's no longer around, and all there is her brothers and the estate. And as an adult, she no longer is going to get the mizonos. As such, once there's a cutoff of the mizonos and she says nothing, she will also be cut off from the dowry as well. If she, however, she lodges a formal protest as becoming an adult. Look, I know, she says to her brothers, I know as an adult, you're no longer entitled to give me mizonos. You're no longer obligated to give me mizonos. I get it. But here, as an adult, I'd like you to know that I'm still interested in receiving a dowry. More than interested. Meaning, I have an entitlement to a dowry, and I still want to collect a dowry. She can say that. And that distinction is true. The Gemara says, however, that let's say the brothers all agree that they're going to continue supporting her as an adult. In other words, they still continue giving her mizonos. Under such circumstances, she doesn't need to lodge a formal protest because she can just simply rest on the fact that if the brothers are still supporting me, they're also going to give me a dowry as well. So under those circumstances, she doesn't have to say anything in order for her to collect.
So they're making an assumption. As long as she can get any
correct,
support,
correct. That's agreed. Correct. I'm Rav Huna, I'm Rabbi Parnas, Enuk Tanai Ksuva. Okay, now, this idea of dowry, is this part of Tanai Ksuva like we've been learning now for some time? Spent a lot of the fifth parak discussing. Tanai Ksuva means that there are certain contractual obligations that a husband has to his wife. And one of them is that after he dies, the estate is going to support the daughters. That's Tanai Ksuva. What about the dowry? Is that also part of Tanai Ksuva? So the Gemara says, now, Whether it is or it isn't, what's that going to change? The Gemara says, well, does it mean that it's not a collectible asset? And when we say collectible asset, it means that you can even go after a purchaser of the land, meaning that the property of the estate is mortgaged against her dowry. And that means that if the estate decides to sell off pieces of its of the properties, she can go to the buyers and say to the buyers, look, I had a lien on that property. To which the Gemara says, "My kamashmalin hamas b'chol yom motzil laparnasa vein motzil lamazonos." So the Gemara says, "No, we do. It is a collectible asset, and there is a lien on the estate against a dowry." Ma'isim b'chol yom. The Gemara says, "We do that all the time." Now for support, no. In other words, there's no lien against their obligation to support their sister, but there is a lien against. Against dowry. The Ella di Ilo Parnassus Gavia na Mimimatalto Vintanexuva Mimikarke Gavia. So the Mimatalto Gavia. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the distinction is as follows. Well, maybe we know that when it comes to Tanaik Suva is only collected from the Karka. Meaning that generally speaking, Tanaik Suva is only a collectible asset from property, but not from movables. And maybe by Parnassa, maybe the point being by Parnassa is that Parnassa is collectible even against movable property. So the Gemara says, well, the Rebbe Idavi Demigba Gavya, Detanya. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we know, we saw this already early in the Masechta, that according to Rebbe, you collect both real estate and movables. So, in terms of supporting the widow, in terms of supporting the daughter, so you go to real estate, and if necessary, you go to movables as well. Divrei Rebbe. So, when we're saying that Parnassa is not Tanaik Suva, what do we mean by that? So, Elamai Parnassa is in a Tanaik Suva lechiditanya. So the Gemara says it goes like the following brisa: Ha Omer Al Yizona Benosav Nechasav Ein Shaman Lo. Let's say a husband on his deathbed says, you know what? I don't want to support my daughters. Meaning that after I die, I know that there's a contractual obligation for my estate to support my daughters. The father says, I'm not interested. So, ain't shamim lo. So after he dies, so even though generally speaking, we carry out all last will and testament, but not if it's against the contractual obligation, he got married. He issued his wife a ksuva. Part of that ksuva contractually obligates the estate to pay the daughters and to support the daughters. There's nothing that he could say that would abrogate that contract, the contracted obligation. I ain't shom him, Lord. We don't listen to him. Al yisparnesu benosav minachasav. But if, however, on his deathbed he says, no dowry for my daughters, shom him, Lord. Sha'aparnos ainu kitanai ksuva. So the Gemara says, this is where it's going to play out. Where if dad says, I don't want my estate to be supporting a dowry for my daughters, so there, again, it's a miserly move. It's not a good move. It's not a generous move. But he has the right to do that. Because the Parnassa is not a ksuva contractual obligation. And so therefore, if that's his last will and testament, that's something where we have to abide by, even though, of course, it means that the daughter's not going to get a dowry, but that's not a contractual obligation, to which the Gemara says, that's a halachic ramification of saying that the Parnassa, that the dowry is not a ksuva obligation. Samach Tesam and Aleph, today's daf. Tal le Rav le Rebbe bein echite. Rav wrote to Rebbe a halachic question, and he wrote it in between the lines. Rashi, top Rashi on the Amud. Samach Tesam and Aleph. Shach lo igerish shlomim. So correspondence, right? This is something that kind of fell out. Fell out of use, like a nice letter, just a social letter. How are things going? Right, Igerish Lamim Vitala Sheilazu Bein Ashitim. And what did he do? He had a halachic question that he also needed to ask as well. So between the lines, he just simply filled in a quick, short halachic question. We don't. It's hard for us to understand why not just simply get another piece of paper and write. Paper back in the good old days was a commodity, right? In other words, the idea of just having a piece of paper and writing on the piece of paper, like that's something which to us is like, okay, get another piece of paper. get another 1,000 pieces of paper. Back then, it was an unbelievable commodity. The Minchas Chinuch, right? I don't know if anyone here has gone through the Minchas Chinuch, right? The old Minchas Chinuch, meaning in its old standard writing, it was a disaster to try to get through because everything was Rashi Tevos. Everything. And one of the reasons why is explained to me by my Rebbeim. One of the reasons why is because when he was writing, he was so poor. Paper was at such a premium that he wanted to try to write as much as he can on the little amount of paper that he had. So everything he wrote was basically Rashi Tevos. And eventually what they did, they reprinted the Minchas Chinuch. So one of the things in the more modern edition of the Minchas Chinuch, although modern I think means like 20 years old, but in other words, in the more updated version of the Minchas Chinuch is that they spelled everything out, so it makes it much easier to read. And also, if you ever see the Minchas Chinuch now, it's three big volumes. Okay, so
it was five pages.
Right. Back in its original form, it was like one volume. it's unbelievable. Anyway, so the idea that paper being a premium, and so okay, so Rav was asking Rebbe a question, and he just kind of filled it in the lines. Anyway, but here.
Actually, Maram Shiva has an explanation also.
This I don't know.
He says that there was a prohibition against writing Torah Shabbat on a paper, so he actually quoted it as a letter.
Okay, fine. Oh, okay, so based on the Gemara and Gittin. Oh, very good. Okay, very good. So, Shibdu, I'm sorry, Ha'achin Shishibdu Mahu. Question goes like this. So what the brothers did is the brothers... Now, mishabed either means that they sold or they simply secured the property against an obligation. And this is property now that should be going to the daughter. So, the Gemara now wants to clarify. Mahu. So again, we are basically dealing with our three primary personalities in this kind of exchange. Rebbe, Rebbe Chia, and Rav. And remember, Rav and Rebbe Chia were related. Nephew, uncle. Rav was a nephew of Rebbe Chia. So anyway, so. Amar lei machru mishkanu. So now, specifically, what's the question being asked over here? Is the question where the brothers actually sold the property? Or was it just simply a mashkon? Did they just simply secure the property against the loan that they owed? So amalei man nafkamina bein machru bein mashkenu motzil leparnasa bein motzil lemazonos. So Rebbe says, okay, I'm glad you think there's a difference. There is no difference. Meaning that if we're talking about parnasa, if we're talking about a dowry, so the daughters have a lien against that obligation. So that means that the brothers could have sold off that property. If the daughters are entitled to a dowry, that is a collectible asset. The daughters can go to the purchasers and say to the purchasers, look, we have a lien on that property. We're going to exercise our lien, and we're going to take that property.
But is there a lien based on the class of the status of the land? It's like a high quality, middle quality?
Well, that point's going to be discussed a little bit later on, so stay tuned. Virav, imachru, I'm sorry. And if it's mezonos, we know that mezonos is not a collectible asset, meaning that the brothers do have an obligation to support the daughters, but that obligation does not have a lien against the property. So mashkon, mochro, doesn't matter. So virav, and now the Gemara goes back to Rav. E machro kami baile nechtov le machro. E mashkeno kami baile nechtov le mashkeno. So the Gemara says, now why wasn't Rav clear about it? Meaning Rav was the one who asked the question to begin with. Why didn't he just simply say either sold or collateralized? Rav tavai kami baile. The Gemara says that Rav actually had both questions in mind. Visavar. E kasivne le machro. So the Gemara, and Rav basically said, look, here's what happens if I wrote the word mechira, if they sold the property. So if the answer is you take it right out of the purchaser's hand, koshke mashkino, well, if the brothers didn't sell the land, if they only collateralized the land, so for sure that land is going to go to the daughters. If sold land is going to be taken away to be given to the daughters, collateralized land for sure is going to be taken away. And ishachli ein motzien akati mishkano kamei baile. And if the answer would have come back and the answer was no, I don't take land away from buyers. Okay, I don't take land away from buyers, but that still doesn't help me regarding the question of collateralized land, because collateralized land hasn't actually moved possession from one person to another person. So in other words, it wouldn't have resolved my second question. Any kasvin alei Mashkano. And if the question that I wrote was just simply, what if the land was collateralized? So Ishalach li de ein motzi in kol shekein machro. Well, if collateralized land is not taken away for the daughter, so sold land for sure is not taken away from the daughter. But Ishalach li motziin. But if collateralized land was taken away, so akati machro kami baili. So, but then sold land also would have been a question, which would have gone unresolved. And so echtov li shibdo. That's why he wrote the very ambiguous term of mishabed, just simply meaning that the land was either sold or mortgaged to somebody else. So demashmaachi could go either way. And now when Rebbe responds to me, Rebbe will basically be answering both my questions. If a land is either sold or mortgaged against a loan, so, and the daughters are entitled to a dowry, do we take that land for the dowry? And the answer is for both of those questions, yes and yes. Okay, we'll stop over here at the position of Rav. Rav is of the opinion that the dowry obligation is such a strong obligation, it goes even against sold lands, certainly against collateralized lands, but sold lands as well. So it's a bona fide obligation. Stay tuned. There's more to discuss on this topic coming up tomorrow.